guys, if you guys were to become a spellcaster in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, I'm talking main three here, no clerics, no bards, nothing. Main three, arcane casters, all right? We're talking wizard, sorcerer, warlock. What would you do? Which one?
Well, first off, I've got to ask why you got to just throw away bards like that. That's offending.
They're support. I'm talking main casters.
I'm sorry. I didn't know bards' vicious mockery was too supportive for you.
Main arcane caster.
Wow.
Talking the big three, baby.
All right. Well, here's my thing about that, okay? You don't really get to choose to be a sorcerer. And
that's
warlocks
true.
Are kind of like wizards who just skipped college. So, I mean,
I'm saying you get to choose. You could like inject.
If it were actually me, if I got to choose, I'd probably pick sorcerer, because that's the easiest. If I was actually me and I know my luck, I'd probably end up a wizard, because I'm not very good at fulfilling my end of bargains, nor am I that charismatic.
Michael?
I'd pick a warlock so I can make a pact with an ancient bard.
I would pick a warlock so I can make a pact with an ancient nuggie.
Well, you know, McDonald's nuggies don't age, so.
Welcome to Traveler's Tips and Tales. I'm Jake.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Ben.
And today we're going to talk about the big three spellcasters.
Yeah.
Warlock, wizard,
although,
and sorcerer.
What the hell, man? Druid. What?
Sorry.
They literally only have spellcasting. That's their only thing they get until 17th level.
Mm-mm. See ya. Did I hear support? No. I'm talking fireball, baby.
You know that whole
wizard
like
can cast,
that whole
druid
question,
can cast fireball.
That whole question with that stipulation of it has to be one of the big three is like saying,
listen,
okay, what
listen,
melee class
listen,
would you choose?
Listen.
But it has to be one of the big three: barbarian, fighter, or paladin. No monks.
listen. No, I'm saying I would not put paladin in there. They're half casters.
I know.
Listen,
I'm saying it because you like monks.
All I'm saying is, I think all three of us have a favorite caster that isn't warlock, wizard, or sorcerer.
Yes.
I think Michael likes bard a lot. I think Ben really likes druid, and I think I love clerics. So I had to rule those out, okay? Because it would be an easy question. All right, I wanted to hear. sorcerers, huh, Michael?
Nice segue, Jake.
Thanks.
It's truly an art form.
I worked really hard on it.
So sorcerers get two new subclasses in Tasha's. The first one is Aberrant Mind. And this one is a very, very nice little psionic power for a sorcerer. It's an alien influence has wrapped its tendrils around your mind, giving you psionic power. That's the brief overview of what this is. And the first thing you get is psionic spells at level 1. You learn additional spells when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown in the psionic spells table. Each of these spells count as sorcerer spells for you, but it does not count against the number of sorcerer spells you know. Whenever you gain a sorcerer level, you can replace one spell you gain from this feature with another spell of the same level. The new spell must be a divination or an enchantment spell from the sorcerer, warlock, or wizard spell list. At first level, you get Arms of Hadar, Dissonant Whispers, and Mind Sliver, which is fantastic. Third level, you get Calm Emotions and Detect Thoughts. Fifth level, you get Hunger of Hadar and Sending. And seventh level, you get Ivard's Black Tentacles and Summon Aberration. And finally, at ninth level, you get Rary's Telepathic Bond and Telekinesis.
Mm.
Pretty good spells, honestly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I like a lot of those.
All around, some pretty good ones.
Also, at first level, you get Telepathic Speech. You can form a telepathic connection between your mind and the mind of another. As a bonus action, choose one creature you can see within 30 feet of you. You and the chosen creature can speak telepathically with each other while the two of you are within a number of miles of each other, equal to your charisma modifier, minimum of 1 mile. To understand each other, you must speak, or you each must speak mentally in a language the other knows. The telepathic connection lasts for a number of minutes equal to your sorcerer level. It ends early if you are incapacitated or die, or if you use this ability to form a connection with a different creature.
Cool.
That's never pretty says, solid.
Never says anywhere that you can't do it more than once, too. Yeah. Just keep doing it all day long.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty solid.
You just got to be within 30 feet of them from the beginning.
Yeah. But imagine, like, you use that with somebody, and then they teleport into, like, the middle of a dungeon.
True.
That's within the mile radius, or however many miles you have access to. They can just speak to you.
Yep, you've got a bond with them for the next 1 to 20 minutes.
It's just improved message.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. At 6th level, you get 2 things. The first one you get is psionic sorcery.
Good tricks. Maybe we're making a pact with you, and you could just, I'm your patron with some random, like, villager or something.
Oh, man.
That would be great.
but psionic sorcery, so when you cast any spell of first level or higher from your psionic spells feature, you can cast it by expending a spell slot as normal or by spending a number of sorcery points equal to the spell's level. If you cast the spell using sorcery points, it requires no verbal or somatic components, and it requires no material components unless they are consumed by the spell. Dude, you just got like extra spell slots.
Kinda, yeah. That are cheaper than normal sorcery points to spell slot conversion as well, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can only use them for your psionic spells, but
which still. Are your special, you know, your arsenal, but yeah.
It's pretty great. Mm-hmm. I like being able to cast Mind Sliver for essentially free.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you get a bunch of free spells on its own is, like, already really good, so.
And then also at 6th level, you get psychic defenses, and this one is fantastic. You gain resistance to psychic damage, and you have advantage on saving throws against being charmed or frightened.
Okay.
That's like, the hardest damage to gain resistance to.
And, like, 2 very common, you know, conditions.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, cool.
This is pretty solid. 6th level, guys.
14th... Yeah, by 6th level, that's kind of like amazing.
Yeah, imagine pairing that, like, somehow, if by some weird, strange occurrence you decided to pair this with Barbarian, and
yeah, you have, I mean,
Totem of the Bear.
It's not weird. You could just do it. It's easy.
Just have resistance to everything while you rage.
Just gotta have the stats for it, man.
Literally everything.
You only gotta dip 3, so.
And then you get 14th level, okay? You get a revelation in flesh. You can unleash the aberrant truth hidden within yourself. As a bonus action, you can spend 1 or more sorcery points to magically transform your body for 10 minutes. For each sorcery point you spend, you can gain 1 of the following benefits of your choice, the effects of which last until the transformation ends. There are 4 different benefits here. So, the first one, you can see any invisible creature within 60 feet of you, provided it is not behind total cover. Your eyes also turn black or become writhing sensory tendrils.
Right. Okay, right. I'll just go with the black, I think.
Well, I feel a feeling, mean, you
go
probably,
all the way, man.
I have a feeling you would take this next one over that one anyways.
Okay.
You gain a flying speed equal to your walking speed, and you can hover. As you fly, your skin glistens with mucus or shines with an otherworldly light.
Gotta love flying mucus monsters, man.
I'll take the otherworldly light one. That sounds cool. Thank you.
The next one, you gain a swimming speed equal to twice your walking speed, and you can breathe underwater. Moreover, gills grow from your neck or fan out from behind your ears. Your fingers become webbed, or you grow writhing cilia that extend through your clothing.
I'll just do the fingered.
You just want web fingers? Okay.
Yeah, I'm good without the cilia. I'm cool with all the tidy hairs all over my body.
Okay.
That moved me along.
The last one, your body, along with any equipment you're wearing or carrying, becomes slimy and pliable. You can move through any space as narrow as 1 inch without squeezing, and you can spend 5 feet of movement to escape from non-magical restraints or being grappled.
All right, that one I'm cool with, just in general.
I'm an ooze. Fear me.
But yeah, you could spend 4 sorcery points and gain all of those.
True. I don't see a world where you need flying speed and swimming speed at the same time, most likely. The seeing invisible creatures could just be helpful sometimes, I guess, but that last one sounds very helpful.
You know, maybe you just want to be a swimming mucus ball.
I mean, that last one I feel like is, like, very able to be used. Like, I feel like I'd use that a lot.
Oh, yeah. Know?
Like, there's plenty of times where, like... Like, I mean, if you're, like, locked in jail or something, you can just go through the bars or whatever. Or, you know, you're sneaking into a place. That just all sounds useful.
Dude, I would 100% take the flying with the mucus and then the slime ball, like, pliable ooze. And then I would just be a flying loogie.
But you've also got to take the invisible creature so you can have tendril eyes.
Yeah, but what you have to do is you have to multi-class into Battle Rager Barbarian, so you can just fly and then smack into people to deal damage to them.
Fantastic. so that's a 14th level. And then at 18th level, you get Warping Implosion, which just sounds so incredible. You can unleash your aberrant power as a space warping anomaly. As an action, you can teleport to an unoccupied space you can see within 120 feet of you. Immediately after you disappear, each creature within 30 feet of the space you left must make a strength saving throw. On a failed save, a creature takes 3d10 force damage and is pulled straight toward the space you left, ending in an unoccupied space as close to your former space as possible. On a successful save, the creature takes half as much damage and is not pulled. Once you do this feature, you cannot do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you spend 5 sorcery points to use it again. So you can just use this, spend 5 sorcery points, and then use it on your very next turn.
True.
That's kind of a lot of sorcery points, though.
I mean,
but I mean, also at this level,
you
have
access to 18.
And also, it already, like, does a lot of things as well. Like, you're teleporting anywhere within 120 feet. And then also, you pull someone else. Like, I feel like that's a lot that you're doing.
And imagine you do this from your last feature, Revelation of Flesh, from your flight.
True.
30 feet above the ground, you just yeet yourself away. And then those guys all go up into the air and take fall damage.
They take force damage in the first place, and then they come up into the air, and then they fall back down to the ground, and then they take fall damage. And
yeah.
You're 120 feet over there.
So. Yeah.
And it's free the first time, and then to do it a second time, you only have to...
Yeah.
5 sorcery points.
Yeah. That's it. Or just don't use it again until you take a long rest.
You get the sorcery points back.
Yeah. Overall, I really like that subclass.
It's pretty rounded out. Yeah. Honestly, like, it started out pretty strong with having extra spells for sorcerers, because that's, if you ask me, that's one of the sorcerers' like biggest weaknesses, is that, like, they don't have an arsenal like anybody else. They don't choose spells out of prepared spells that they know,
yeah,
you know, and they just kind of like have what they have, and that's it.
Yeah.
Now I have to play a Triton or a Sea Elf that's like the son of an Aboleth, but the Aboleth is like his stepdad, and it's a weird sitcom type thing, but it'll be interesting. But it'll be this subclass.
Ben, I've got an idea for you. Just hold a pin in that. All right, hold a pin.
I hate.
Yeah, that is the aberrant mind. But now we move on to the clockwork soul.
Mm-hmm.
At first level, you learn additional spells when you reach certain levels in this class, as shown on the clockwork spells table. Each of these spells counts as a sorcerer spell for you, but it does not count against the number of sorcerer spells you know. Whenever you gain a sorcerer level, you can replace one spell you gain from this feature with another spell of the same level. The new spell must be an abjuration or transmutation spell from the sorcerer, warlock, or wizard spell list. First level, you get alarm and protection from evil and good. Third level, you get aid and lesser restoration. Fifth level, you get dispel magic and protection from energy. Seventh level, you get freedom of movement and summon construct. And at ninth level, you get greater restoration and wall of force. You got some good ones. Some that I'm not, like, overly excited about, but overall, you got some good ones.
Like what?
I'm not really, like, too good about, like, protection from energy or protection from evil and good. I don't really ever use those.
I feel like those are really good. You just gotta know when to use them.
Aid, I don't use a whole often, and alarm, not really crazy about. I agree, about.
Aid is not that great. Alarm is a ritual, though, so you can do that as much as you want.
Yeah.
It's a freebie, but yeah.
In addition, consult the manifestations of order table and choose or randomly determine a way your connection to order manifests while you are casting any of your sorcerer spells. Spectral cogwheels hover behind you, the hands of a cluck spin in your eyes, which is pretty neat. Your skin glows with a brassy sheen. Floating equations and geometric objects overlay your body. Your spellcasting focus temporarily takes the form of a tiny clockwork mechanism, or the ticking of gears or ringing of a clock can be heard by you and those affected by your magic.
Hmm.
Also, if you and your DM come up with another thing that's cool, do it. You're not bound by only these options.
Yeah, about how you're connected to clockwork and how that is expressed through your magic and whatnot.
Yeah. Also, at first level, you get Restore Balance. Your connection to the plane of absolute order allows you to equalize chaotic moments. When a creature you can see within 60 feet of you is about to roll a d20 with advantage or disadvantage, you can use your reaction to prevent the roll from being affected by advantage and disadvantage. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So this is kind of a metagame feature, but I really like it anyways. And it's first level.
I mean, I don't think it's that metagamey.
I mean, it is because it has to deal with the rolling of the dice directly, not something in-game.
Yeah, but a lot of things require you knowing things about rolling of the dice directly. Like divination wizards and whatnot, you know? Like you.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that's not metagaming. I'm just saying this is.
Like the chrono magic?
Oh, chronoturgy?
Chronoturgy. I couldn't think of the word for some reason. One of their abilities is that like they let you re-roll something after they see the outcome, right?
Yeah.
So like that's... I don't think there's anything bad with that.
No, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying it's a kind of metagamey feature.
Yeah, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with it.
It's nothing more metagamey than like a divination wizard, though.
Yeah.
I feel... I don't know. I just feel like the word like metagaming is like has a very negative connotation. You know? I guess that's my thing.
Okay, sorry. It's a very meta ability.
I agree. It's to call it metagaming is negative. It's a very useful, and I think it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I'm just saying, like, whatever. We'll move past.
Well, the problem is you're labeling it as metagaming.
At sixth level, you get Bastion of Law. And this one, you can tap into the grand equation of existence to imbue a creature with a shimmering shield of order. As an action, you can expend 1 to 5 sorcery points to create a magical ward around yourself or another creature you can see within 30 feet of you. The ward lasts until you finish a long rest or until you use this feature again. The ward is represented by a number of d8s equal to the number of sorcery points spent to create it. When the warded creature takes damage, it can expend a number of those dice, roll them, and reduce the damage taken by the total rolled on those dice. That is sick.
Jeez.
I really like that. Six level, everybody.
If you, like, cranked all your sorcery points into that and someone just got, like, nuked, they could just, like, un-nukeify themselves. It's like, what?
Yeah, that's, you can potentially have a ward of 5d8.
And I guess you could hold on to some of them, too, to save them for later. Man, jeez.
Yeah, it's wow. Just until you finish a long rest or until you use this feature again. The ward lasts literally all day.
Yeah, this ability really made this a lot more of a tanky. it just reminds me of Abjuration Wizard now.
Yeah, I mean, you could just do it to yourself and then you're solid. You can just continue to cast spells and potentially
put it on the tank.
If you're reducing that damage, you're more likely to keep your concentration.
Yeah, true.
So it's pretty nice. True.
You could also just put it on the tank.
You could, like, you could.
Like, go wild, boyo.
Yeah, that's real nice, man.
At 14th level, you get Trance of Order. You gain the ability to align your consciousness to the endless calculations of Mechanus. As a bonus action, you can enter this state for 1 minute. For the duration, attack rolls against you cannot benefit from advantage, and whenever you make an attack roll, an ability check, or a saving throw, you can treat a roll of 9 or lower on the d20 as a 10. Once you use this bonus action, you cannot use it again until you finish a long rest, unless you spend 5 sorcery points to use it again.
That's kind of wild, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, just a bit.
I mean, it only lasts for a minute, but, like, I'd probably use this in combat, so that's kind of wild.
Attack rolls against you cannot benefit from advantage. Like, that's pretty great if you're versing some rogues. No advantage for you.
Take that, loser.
No sneak attack.
Well, I mean,
unless there's two rogues. Engaged.
Yeah, unless they have multiple people engaged with you. That's beside the point, I guess.
So at 18th level, you get Clockwork Cavalcade. You summon spirits of order to expunge disorder around you. As an action, you summon the spirits in a 30-foot cube or originating from you. The spirits look like Modrons or other constructs of your choice. The spirits are intangible and invulnerable, and they create the following effects within the cube before vanishing. The spirits restore up to 100 hit points, divided as you choose among any number of creatures of your choice in the cube. Pretty sick. Any damaged objects entirely in the cube are repaired instantly. Yes, please. Every spell of 6 level or lower ends on creatures and objects of your choice in the cube. Once you use this action, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest, unless you spend 7 sorcery points to use it again.
Wow.
I don't know why you would need to use it again.
First one's free. Never forget.
But,
first one's free a day.
You know, just... It doesn't say that it repairs only non-magical items.
Yeah.
It can repair anything.
Like, first one's free. Then you owe me.
Yeah.
I feel like...
Trust me, you'll be back.
So, are you implying, Michael, that you could, like, use a wand, expend all the charges, have it break because you rolled the 20, and then you just cast this bad boy, use this bad boy feature, and then all of a sudden it's all good?
A wand is an object. Is it not? Now, here's the thing. There can be a long debate about whether or not it restores magical properties. And I could see both sides on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to argue that debate. But
I guess that, yeah, leave that.
I am saying the magical items are indeed objects. So they would be repaired.
And this does not say.
It does not say non-magical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to leave it at that.
The way I'd rule it is I would probably have it repair said item. So it would, like, as if you cast mending on it, you know, like if it was, like, broken in any way, you would repair seams, but it would not restore magical properties.
That's fair.
You know? Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
Remember that pin I told you to hold earlier?
Yeah, what's up?
You know, the pin, it was, you're talking about having a Triton or whatever, or a sea elf.
Yeah, with an Aboleth as a stepdad.
Yeah, Aboleth as a stepdad. But, hear me out. That guy, he makes a pack or something, you know, because he is from the ocean. This is, you know, I thought this tie was going to be better than it was. He makes a pack with, like, a Kraken or something. Or, like, some, like, really ancient elemental or something like that. Point is, welcome to Fathomless Warlock. It's a ocean-themed warlock, and I'm here to talk about it. Okay, so starting off at first level, you get Fathomless Feature. You get an expanded spell list. The Fathomless lets you choose from an extended list of spells when you learn a warlock spell. Following spells are added to the warlock spell list for you. So you can choose these. You don't get them automatically. But, you know, you get more spells. You get Create or Destroy Water, Thunder Wave for first level spells. Second level spells you can choose between in addition of all your other stuff, but also Gust of Wind or Silence. You can also get Lightning Bolt or Sleet Storm for third level spells. You can get Control Water or Summon Elemental, only for water though, for fourth level spells. And you could also get, for 5th level spells, you can get Bigby's Hand, which is supposed to appear as a tentacle rather than a hand, or Cone of Cold. Some pretty cool spells, if you ask me.
Pretty spicy.
Keep in mind, you don't get them for free, you have to pick them.
So. It's interesting the difference, like, you get so many, yeah. But it's interesting that they gave you, like, half attack, half utility spells. Like, you could wake up and choose violence with this class.
Oh, yeah. You could get Create or Destroy Water, or you could get Thunder Wave, you know. You could get Gust of Wind, or, sorry, you could get Silence, or, you know, you could get Gust of Wind, you know. You could get Sleet Storm, or you could get Lightning Bolt. You know,
both of those do damage, though.
So. Yeah, I know. I was just gonna act like one of them did it. You could get, you know, control water. Yeah, that's a pretty normal. Or you could summon a water elemental. You know, and then also Bigby's Hand and Cone of Cold are both damage. But anyways, Bigby's Hand could also be used utility wise. Anyways, you also get another first level ability. It's called Tentacle of the Depths. You can magically summon a spectral tentacle that strikes at your foes. As a bonus action, you create a 10-foot-long tentacle at a point you can see within 60 feet. The tentacle lasts for 1 minute or until you use this feature to create another tentacle. When you create the tentacle, you can make a melee spell attack against one creature within 10 feet of it. On a hit, the creature takes 1d8 cold damage, and its speed is reduced by 10 feet until the start of your next turn. When you reach 10th level in this class, the damage increases to 2d8. As a bonus action on your turn, you can move the tentacle up to 30 feet and repeat the attack. So, you summon it and make an attack, and then on subsequent turns, you can use your bonus action to move it and attack, basically. You can summon the tentacle a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Pretty pog. Also, just as a cherry on top, you get one last first level ability. Wait.
Did you say a long rest?
Yeah.
Warlock?
Warlock that doesn't take short rest for something?
Warlock
Listen. This is a thing that, you know, as right off the bat, it's based off of your proficiency bonus rather than charisma. So, you know, like, it's a lot more limited, and it's pretty useful. You know, it lasts, you know, however long. It actually doesn't say that it ends.
Warlock not having to take a short rest lasts
for 1 minute, and Gift of the Sea is another cherry on top to the first level abilities you get. You also get to, you know, just for free, have a swimming speed of 40 feet and can breathe underwater. still good even if you're, you know, like a Triton or a CEO for, or, you know, one of those water creatures. Because, you know, it's not just your normal speed of 30 feet, it's actually 40 feet, which is better, right? It's better. Yeah, everyone's happy. Woohoo.
I'm not happy, Jake.
So at sixth level, at sixth level, you get to choose, or you don't get to choose, you just get the ability. you get an ability called Oceanic Soul. You are now even more at home in the depths. You gain resistance to cold damage. In addition, when you are fully submerged, any creature that is also fully submerged can understand your speech, and you can understand theirs. As if, you know, D&D players already just didn't act like that wasn't a problem. Let's be real. Anytime anyone has had, like, underwater adventures in D&D, they just understood each other. No one has ever worried about it. Maybe every now and then someone will speak all bubbly just to, just to, you know, be a memester.
Yeah.
You know, but listen, we all communicate even when we're underwater. Let's be real here. Also at sixth level, you get another ability, apparently. What? Okay. It's called Guardian Coil. Your tentacle of the depths can defend you and others, interposing itself between them and harm. When you or a creature you can see takes damage within 10 feet of the tentacle, you can use your reaction to choose one of those creatures and reduce the damage to that creature by 1d8. When you reach 10th level in this class, the damage produced by the tentacle increases to 2d8. So not only do it attack, but it also protect. What a good tentacle. That's exactly what I want all of my tentacles to do. Attack but protect as well. Right? Right, fellas? Am I right, oh, God. Fellas?
How many tentacles do you have?
Moving on to 10th level.
Jake.
In addition to increasing Jake. Those D8s to 2D8s, you also get Grasping Tentacles. It's a 10th level ability. When you learn the spell Everard's Black Tentacles, it counts as a warlock spell for you, but it doesn't count against the number of spells you know. You can also cast it once without a spell slot and regain the ability to do so when you finish a long rest. When you cast a spell, the patron's magic bolsters you, granting you a number of temporary hit points equal to your warlock level. Moreover, damage can't break your concentration on this spell. You got your go-to!
Yeah.
Evard's Black Tentacles. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You got a go-to spell now. Congrats!
How many tentacles do you have, Jake?
So at 14th level, you got Fathomless Plunge. Okay. 14th level, you can magically open temporary conduits of watery dimensions. As an action, you can teleport yourself up to 5 other willing creatures that you can see within 30 feet of you. Amid a whirl of tentacles, you all vanish and then reappear up to 1 mile away in a body of water you've seen, pond size or larger. No puddles, everybody. Or within 30 feet of it. Each of you appearing in an unoccupied space within 30 feet of the others. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest. Hey, we're back to the short rest! Hey, look! Short rest, warlock! Warlocks don't sleep! Get it? It's a joke.
But we still have that long rest from before.
So, Genie is the next subclass for warlocks. Genie, you know, like the
finally elemental some delicious freaking subclasses.
Hey, what's wrong with Fathomless? It's just only about tentacles and always about tentacles. Anyways, genies, you get an expended spell list. And it depends on what kind of genie you actually get. So there's the four genies. There's Dao for earth, Genie for air, Afridi for fire, or Marid for water. And it depends on, you know, which one of them you get different spells. All of them, though, no matter what type of genie you are from,
You always get Detect Evil and Good for first levels, Phantasmal Force for second level, Create Food and Water for third level, Phantasmal Killer for fourth level. You always get Creation for fifth level, and no matter what, you get to choose Wish for ninth level. Keep in mind, this is all the expended spell list. You don't get these spells for free. You just get to choose from these spells in addition to, you know, other spells. Then, depending on what kind of genie you are, so if you're an earth genie, you get Sanctuary for first level, Spike Growth for second, third level you get Meld into Stone, fourth level you get Stone Shape, or fifth level you get Wall of Stone. If you're an air genie, you get Thunder Wave for first level, Gust of Wind for second, Wind Wall for third, Greater Invisibility for fourth, or Seeming for fifth. Those are all pretty good. For Fire Genie, you get Burning Hands for first, Scorching Ray second, Fireball three, Fire Shield for fourth, Flame Strike for fifth, and then also for Water Genie, you get Fog Cloud for first, Blur for second, Sleet Storm for third, Control Water for fourth, and Cone of Cold for fifth.
Nice, nice.
Whew. Also, first level, that was a lot, I'll admit. But it's kind of cool that they're like specialized for what kind of genie you have, you know. So, also at first level, you get to choose what your genie's vessel is. Your patron gifts you a magical vessel that grants you a measure of the genie's power. The vessel is a tiny object, and you can use it as a spellcasting focus for your warlock spells. You decide what the object is, or you can determine what it is randomly by rolling on the genie's vessel table. The ones that they give, for example, are an oil lamp, an urn, a ring with a compartment, a stoppered bottle, a hollow statuette, or an ornate lantern. And while you're touching the vessel, you can use it in the following ways. You can use bottle respite. As an action, you can magically vanish and enter your vessel, which remains in the space you left. The interior of the vessel is an extra-dimensional space of the in the shape of a 20-foot radius cylinder, 20 feet high, and resembles your vessel. The interior is appointed with cushions and low tables and is a comfortable temperature. While inside, you can hear the area around your vessel as if it were in its space. You can remain inside the vessel up to a number of hours equal to twice your proficiency bonus. You exit the vessel early if you use a bonus action to leave, if you die, or if the vessel is destroyed. When you exit the vessel, you peer in an unoccupied space closest to it. Any objects left in the vessel remain there until carried out, and if the vessel is destroyed, every object stored there harmlessly appears in the unoccupied spaces closest to the vessel's former space. Once you enter the vessel, you can't enter again until you finish a long rest. That alone is pretty good, because you can hide stuff in there, you can sleep in there, you can do a whole bunch of stuff. Towards the beginning, you know, you won't be able to last in there for the full 8 hours, but eventually you'll get proficiency bonus 4, and you can stay in there for a whole 8 hours. If you decide to be an elf, you could, you know, you could meditate in there instead, and you could long rest in there right from the beginning. Totally safe from whatever dangers might be outside. Maybe you're a party full of elves. Who knows?
I'm sorry. Anyways. I heard long rest.
Guys, listen. Like, things are just going to have to be at long rest, okay? Literally not everything can be redeemed by a short rest. It's kind of ridiculous that you would expect this kind of stuff.
Then weaken the ability.
So, Genie's Wrath! Once during each of your turns, when you hit with an attack roll, you can deal extra damage to the target equal to your proficiency bonus. The type of this damage is determined by your patron. Bludgeoning for Earth. Thunder for Air. Fire for fire, cold for water. I feel like fire was pretty obvious one. The vessel's AC equals your spell save DC. Its hit points equal your warlock level plus your proficiency bonus, and it is immune to poison and psychic damage. If the vessel is destroyed or you lose it, you can perform a 1-hour ceremony to receive a replacement from your patron. This ceremony can be performed during a short or long rest, and the previous vessel is destroyed if it still exists. The vessel vanishes in a flare of elemental power when you die. It is important to notice that it says that the previous vessel is destroyed if it still exists. Therefore, if you lose it and it has stuff in it, you destroy it, and all that stuff is not in your new one. It don't work like that.
Well, that sucks.
Hold on to your ring, idiot. It's like not a hard object to hold on to. Anyways, Moving on to Elemental Gift at 6th level, you begin to take on Charismatics of your patron's kind. You now have resistance to a damage type determined by your patron's kind. Bludgeoning for earth, thunder for air, fire for fire, cold for water. I feel like those are all pretty straightforward. They're the same kinds as before. In addition, as a bonus action, you can give yourself a flying speed of 30 feet that lasts for 10 minutes, during which you can hover. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. You all better not say it. I'm just going to move on before you get the chance. At 10th level, you have Sanctuary Vessel. When you enter the genie's vessel via the bottled respite feature, you can now choose up to 5 willing creatures that you can see within 30 feet of you, and those chosen creatures are drawn into the vessel with you. As a bonus action, you can eject any number of the creatures from the vessel, and everyone is ejected if you leave or die or if the vessel is destroyed. In addition, anyone, including you, who remains within the vessel for at least 10 minutes gains the benefits of finishing a short rest, and anyone can add your proficiency bonus to the number of hit points they regain if they spend any hit dice as part of that short rest there. Look, guys. Warlock has an easy short rest now.
But I heard long rest.
That was for the last ability. That wasn't even involving this ability.
Well, yeah, but see, you didn't let us interject.
At 14th level, you get an ability called Limited Wish. Because, you know, it wasn't bad enough that you already get to choose Wish for a 9th level spell, which you normally wouldn't get. You entreat your patron to grant you a small wish. As an action, you can speak your desire to the genie's vessel, requesting the effect of one spell that is 6th level or lower and has a casting time of 1 action. This spell could be from any class of spell list, and you don't need to meet the requirements in that spell, including costly components. The spell simply takes effect as part of the action. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish 1d4 long rests.
That's not bad. Multiple long rests?
This is a pretty OP ability. Listen, man, you've got a genie patron. The whole wish thing is based off of genies anyways. It kind of makes sense that you get this kind of stuff. And the normal spell is like multiple days anyways, where you're like weak as hell.
But the normal spell wish doesn't have the limitations of 6th level or lower.
Okay, this is nerfed, so it's nerfed in the back draws too. It's not, you're not weak as hell for multiple days. It's just that you can't do it for multiple days. It makes sense. You know what, Michael? Next time that I'm playing a genie warlock and I have the option to freaking revivify your sorry butt, and I choose not to when I, you know, don't want to use limited wish, and we don't have a cleric because I'm the cleric player. Kiss your sorry butt goodbye. You'll know why I did it.
But will your character know why he did it?
Well, good thing I'm controlling my character and I'm salty.
I am so enraged right now. By the sheer fact that long rest is even mentioned when we're talking about Warlock.
Come on, man. Like, it's not that. Come on, guys. I think you guys are being too harsh here.
If it can't be fixed by taking a nap, then is it even a warlock?
True. Yeah, because you still get all your spell slots and stuff back. Like, it's still broken. Well, yeah,
of course you do, because it's a long rest.
No, I'm saying you could still do the short rest thing and still get all your spell slots back, which are broken anyway.
You mean your whole, like, 4 spell slots?
Yeah. They're all 5th level. Welcome to Warlock. That's kind of how it works. I don't even know what you're arguing about anymore. Like, this was all understood before we even started this, so...
Well, yeah, but you're...
Hey, Ben, I heard there's a new wizard out there.
His name's Zion. Which, let's be real, that's why I'm really talking about it today.
That's true.
Yeah, there's a new wizard. There's actually 2, but one we're not going to talk about because it was already released before. And that is Blade Singing, which is actually really cool. I'm really glad that they've added it, not once but twice. The other one is in Sword Coast Adventures Guide, so we won't cover that one today because it's not unique.
Yeah, it's nice that it's being added in like a actual like supplement book and not,
yeah,
you know, skag.
it's not gonna be setting specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm glad that it's there, but we're not going to cover it today because it already existed before this.
Yep.
But the other one...
You guys know the deal. We've done this with, like, 3 different subclasses already.
Yeah. The other subclass, though, is called the Order of Scribes.
All right.
It's a wizard subclass, and unlike all the other wizard subclasses, which focus on a school of magic, the Order of Scribes doesn't.
War Mage and... in Blade Singing, but
okay. Yeah, but it's different. You focus on all magic.
Mm.
Magic itself is what you focus on. So
what you're telling me is that Order of Scribes is like nerd squared for wizard.
Yeah, so Order of Scribes, instead of focusing on one school, the magic itself, your spell book itself is what you focus on. So let me just read. At level 2, you start out with, you get 2 abilities. You have a wizardly quill. As a bonus action, you can magically create a tiny quill in your free hand. The magic quill has the following properties. The quill doesn't require ink. When you write with it, it produces ink in a color of your choice on the writing surface. The time you must spend to copy a spell into your spellbook equals 2 minutes per spell level if you use the quill for the transcription. You can erase anything you write with the quill if you wave the feather over the text as a bonus action, provided the text is within 5 feet of you.
Oh my god, they made an eraser.
Yep. And this quill disappears if you create another one or if you die.
Nice!
The other second
Look
level
ability...
Look at
me, supporting your guys' subclasses because I think they're cool.
The other second level is called Awakened Spellbook. That's right. You're so lonely that even other wizards won't talk to you, so you make friends with your book. Using specially prepared inks and ancient incantations passed down by your wizardly order, or found, or discovered, or whatever you want to do, I don't know, you have awakened an arcane sentience within your spellbook. While you are holding the book, it grants you the following benefits. You can use the book as a spellcasting focus for your wizard spells.
All right.
So, yeah, that by itself is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
When you cast a wizard spell with a spell slot, you can temporarily replace its damage type with a type that appears in another spell in your spellbook, which magically alters the spell's formula for this casting only. The latter spell must be of the same level as the spell slot you expend.
Hmm.
Thus why I keep Dragon's Breath and Chromatic Orb prepared at all times, because they have a bunch of different spell types that I can use on anything
Zion. You could swap stuff around and make sure that you could do fire, ice, lightning, etc., etc., acid,
correct,
whatever.
Or what Zion does is he changes everything to psychic damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then when you cast a wizard spell as a ritual, you can use the spell's normal casting time rather than adding 10 minutes to it. Once you use this benefit, you can't do so again until you finish the long rest.
You get one free ritual to be way faster than that.
Yep, cool. And if necessary, you can replace the book over the course of a short rest by using your wizardly quill to write arcane sigils in a blank book or a magic spell book to which you are attuned. At the end of the rest, your spellbook's consciousness is summoned into the new book, which the consciousness transforms into your spellbook along with all its spells. If the previous book still existed somewhere, all the spells vanish from its pages.
So,
when you get a new spellbook, you don't have to copy your spells.
Yeah, my only thing is, like, why'd they add the conscious bit? Like, before here,
You'll
it wasn't
see.
Fully implied that you're talking to your spellbook. Like,
you will see.
Person.
Because at 6th level, you can conjure forth the mind of your awakened spellbook.
Ah.
It's called Manifest Mind. As a bonus action, while the book is on your person, you can cause the mind to manifest as a tiny spectral object, hovering in an unoccupied space of your choice within 60 feet of you. The spectral mind is intangible and doesn't occupy its space, and it sheds dim light in a 10-foot radius. It looks like a ghostly tome, a cascade of text, or a scholar from the past. Your choice. Or you could make it look like one of those little fairy things from Legend of Zelda. Who knows?
Okay. You mean a fairy? It's just
a fairy. Yeah. Or, you know, a butterfly in Zion's case.
Korok!
Yep. While manifested, the spectral mind can hear and see, and it has dark vision with a range of 60 feet. The mind can telepathically share with you what it sees and hears, no action required. So it's like a familiar, but better.
Okay.
And whenever you cast a wizard spell on your turn, you can cast it as if you were in the spectral mind's space instead of your own, using its senses. You can do so a number of times per day equal to your proficiency bonus, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. As a bonus action, you can cause the spectral mind to hover up to 30 feet into an unoccupied space you or it can see. It can pass through creatures, but not objects. The spectral mind manifesting... spectral mind stops manifesting if it is ever more than 300 feet away from you, if someone casts dispel magic on it, or if the spellbook is destroyed, or if you die, or if you dismiss it as a bonus action. Once you conjure it, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of any level to conjure it again.
Any level?
Yep.
Well, I'm obviously going to use 9th, because who needs that spell slot anyways? Am I right, boys?
Yeah.
Am I right, boys?
At 10th level, you get Master Scrivener. Yeah, it's weird. But whenever you finish a long rest, you can create one magic scroll by touching your wizardly quill to a blank piece of paper or parchment and causing one spell from your awakened spellbook to be copied onto the scroll. The spellbook must be within 5 feet of you when you make the scroll. The chosen spell must be of first or second level and must have a casting time of one action. Once it's in the scroll, the spell's power is enhanced, counting as one level higher than normal. You can cast the spell from the scroll by reading it as an action. The scroll is unintelligible to anyone else, and the spell vanishes from the scroll when you cast it or when you finish the next long rest. You are also adept at crafting spell scrolls, which are described in the treasure chapter in Dungeon Master's Guide. The gold and time you must spend to make such a scroll are halved if you use your wizardly quill.
Pog.
Okay.
Imagine if you could just create scrolls. Like, for anyone to use in action for free. Just be like, boom, 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 boom. Just a whole bunch of scrolls.
Now, this next one's going to be a little complicated, but it's the best ability I think I have ever read for Wizard in my entire life.
All right.
One with the word, 14th level ability. Your connection to your awakened spellbook has become so profound that your soul has become entwined with it. While the book is on your person, you have advantage on all arcana checks as the spellbook helps you remember magical lore. Moreover, if you take damage while your spellbook's mind is manifested, you can prevent all of that damage to you by using a reaction to dismiss the spectral mind, using its magic to save yourself. Then, roll 3d6. The spellbook temporarily loses spells of your choice that have a combined spell level equal to that roll or higher. So that can be one level 9 spell, or 3 level 3s, or 9 level 1s, doesn't matter, as long as it's equal to the number that you rolled. But if there aren't enough spells in the book to cover this cost, you drop to 0 hit points.
Oof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can prevent, though, all damage that you would take otherwise. And all you have to do is temporarily forget some of the spells that you've hoarded into your magic spellbook.
I mean, it's kind of like, it kind of depends, because, like, it can be a gamble sometimes, right? Because maybe it's a good amount of damage, but it wouldn't take you to 0. And you're like, all right, I got this. I just got to roll, you know, not wild on 3d6. Let's not aim for three sixes. And then, you know, you roll like a really high number and all of a sudden you don't have that many spells and now you're at zero. When you could have been at like, you know, 15 or something.
Until you finish 1d6 long rests, you are incapable of casting the lost spells, even if you find them on a scroll or in another spellbook. After you finish the required number of rests, the spells reappear in the spellbook. Once you use this reaction, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest.
Yeah, it's kind of OP, but also like kind of sketch. I don't know how I feel about that, man. Not having a spell for 6 days, well, up to 6 days.
Yeah, but like I said, with the quill that you use, though, it's 2 minutes per spell level to write a spell down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, keep in mind,
it doesn't though, like, take long at all.
Yeah, but like even if you find scrolls and whatnot, you can't use it even past, you know, even if you have a scroll of it or anything. It's just like you're like arcanely incapable of casting those spells for 1d6 days, which can be kind of tough sometimes, especially if you're like planning to do stuff. Like, you know, maybe you're thinking like, you know, I don't need like super sneaky spells. And then all of a sudden, you know, you do this and then you roll a six. And then, you know, the next day, all of a sudden you realize that you have to like do a heist soon or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, damn, if you only had those spells. It's still good, though. I mean, especially for a squishy wizard, right? Like, I feel like I'd be throwing spells out the window all the time for this.
Oh, yeah, I would, too. I will when Zion hits level.
This is useless to me now. But, yeah, those are the subclasses for the more arcane-based classes in D&D. We got Warlock, we got Wizard, we got Sorcerer. And, yeah, that's the new stuff from Tasha's.
Yeah,
guys, I think we did it. We're done now.
We covered Tasha's.
We covered Tasha's. We actually did it, boys.
So what do we do now?
I guess we talk about other stuff next week.
Okay.
Huh. If you want to hear about it, though, you can check us out on YouTube. And next week there will be a new episode up with about something probably not about Tasha's anymore because we pretty much covered it all from this point. But yeah, YouTube at Travelers Tips and Tales. Or if you want to hear about what we might be thinking about, you know, for next week, or maybe see a meme or two, you could go to Instagram at Travelers Tips and Tales, or some other posts or whatnot on Facebook at Travelers Tips and Tales, or you could go to Tumblr at Travelers Tips and Tales, or Patreon and give us
Jake.
Some sweet dough on Travelers Tips and Tales on Patreon if you want. What was that, Michael?
You skipped Twitter.
Oh, Twitter's Tips Tales, because we like to be complicated. Or you could go to your email address, whatever, you know, whatever email thing that you use, and you could email us at travelerstipsandtales@gmail.com and ask us, hey, travelers, why you no talk about Tasha's anymore? Tasha's is cool and fun and does lots of psychic-based things, and I think you guys should talk about it more. Or yada, 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 you missed this about this, or whatever. You could email us that stuff, and we'll go, oh, dang, bro, my bad.
Shoot. Maybe next time.
Or if you want to, you know, check out what kind of stuff we might have available on our Patreon, like what kind of homebrew and whatnot we have and other stuff, you can check out our website. Or if, you know, you just want to figure out more about us, or if you forgot most of the stuff that I just recently said, you could go to travelerstipsandtales.com and you could see a couple of homebrew things that are exclusively to our webpage. At travelerstipsandtales.com, or you know, you can also look at a little bit of stuff about us.
Yeah, including our very own beautiful homebrew versions of ourselves, our stat blocks, which those are on our website and our Patreon. But I really think you should go to our website and check them out because our website's pretty cool.
Or if you want, you can go to our Patreon and check them out. I mean, that's up to you.
Yeah, be like the people, you know, like Dalton or Ben's mom. You don't necessarily have to be that crazy with it.
If we were to name two in particular for no reason. yeah, it could be like those two.
Also, thank you to the wonderful game stores that allow us to promote ourselves on their storefronts because they're amazing. Oh, yeah. Forgotten Path Games in Vacaville, where we all met each other. Besides, you know, me and Jacob, we already knew each other. Matt Alpaca Games in Fairfield. Davis Cards and Games in Davis. Hey, and Hobby baby. Badger Games in West Sacramento. these are all wonderful places. I love them all. Go check them out. And if you're not in the greater Sacramento area, you know, check out your local game store. You know, Google game stores near you. And you might
find some
pretty close ones. Not gonna lie. They're everywhere.
They're out there. They're a lot more common nowadays. But yeah.
Also, a couple of last minute things. We've been including a link to a Google Doc that is a form that we have as a little bit of questionnaire that we would love your guys' feedback on. This is going to be the last week that we include it. So go ahead, please fill that out. This is your last opportunity to do so. This is going to be left up until our very next episode gets released, and then it's not going to be there anymore. It's going to be gone. Also,
unless you're watching on YouTube, then it's just in the description and it'll forever be in the description. We're not going to take it out of the description. But
we won't be accepting.
We're going to stop looking at it.
we won't be accepting any more answers for the questions.
Yeah.
So it's going to be useless. Also, if you are like, yo, why was the audio kind of scuffed? You know, COVID happened. Things happened. People's situations got changed. So we hope you guys understand.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we care about our own safety a little bit more than this. Unfortunately, I know you guys might be a little shocked, but we're human. We have priorities. A couple of us have to go to work every day, and sometimes, you know, you can't do that if you have COVID. So
yeah, we have to quarantine it up, you know. So
you have to accommodate and maybe not be home sometimes. So thank you for understanding.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Bye.
Adventure away.